Welcome to the My Crazy Office podcast with the authors of Working With You Is Killing Me, Working For You Isn't Working For Me, and Mean Girls at Work, Kathy Elster and Catherine Crowley. They're committed to creating world peace, one crazy office at a time. And now, here are Kathy and Catherine.
Hey everyone, I'm Kathy Elster.
And I'm Catherine Crowley, and welcome to My Crazy Office.
And today we want to welcome our guest, Bonnie Marcus. I'm going to give you her bio before we let her speak. So Bonnie Marcus is the founder and president of Women's Success Coaching, a company that assists professional women in successfully navigating the workplace and advancing their careers. She is a writer for Forbes and Business Insider and a much sought after professional speaker. Every time I read an article in Forbes, you wrote it. So it's so funny. So welcome, Bonnie. We're so glad to have
That's great to hear.
Yeah. Bonnie's the perfect person to help us address today's question, which involves someone who lost a promotion to a coworker and wonders what she should do next.
All right, what's the question?
I just lost a promotion at work to a colleague of mine, and I'm very upset. The job entailed running our department, where I've been a top producer for 5 years. My boss kept telling me that I was the front runner for this position, but I recently returned from maternity leave, and as a new mother, it's taken everything I've got to get dressed, get out the door, and get to work. My colleague does not have kids and spends a lot of her time schmoozing with people in positions of authority. She dresses impeccably, flirts with the CEO, and takes every opportunity to appear at conferences and media events on behalf of our company. I used to do those things, minus the flirting, but haven't recently. What can I do to further my career now?
This question reminds me after I had had a baby, and it was probably the seventh week after I had had her, I got a lunch date with a writer from Cranes, and I was so excited, and nothing fit. I couldn't close my pants. I finally found a skirt that I was able to take one of those big pins and close it so that it wouldn't fall off. And I was so physically uncomfortable with this lunch, but I got quoted. I got quoted in Cranes. But anyway, so I just thought I would share that story.
No, it's so real, right? That when you have a baby or when you return from maternity leave, you're in a very different position, let's say, than before you went out, or especially even before you became pregnant. So Bonnie, I'm curious, how do you coach someone in this kind of situation?
Well, this is a really interesting question, because one of the women I interviewed for the book had a similar situation. She had been on the fast track, really up for promotions, getting all the special assignments. She went on a very short maternity leave because she didn't want to jeopardize her career, came back, and she noticed that, okay, now I'm not working with the same clients and I'm not getting the special assignments. So what she did was she went to her HR manager and said, hey, what's up? You know, what's going on? Yeah. I was definitely on a fast track, and now it seems like, you know, I'm put out in a parking lot. And she found out that the HR manager and her boss made the assumptions that she wouldn't want to work that hard. She wouldn't want to travel because she was a new mother. So in this case, I would say that the first thing that this woman needs to do is to have a conversation with her boss to just reiterate, confirm that she has not changed her career aspirations because she's a mother, and confirm that she definitely still wants to be, you know, on the path for a promotion.
I think that's really good advice. And I actually read that story in your book. It's in your book, right?
Yeah.
In The Politics of Promotion. I don't know if I mentioned that Bonnie wrote The Politics of Promotion. Okay. Just thought I'd say that again. Yeah. I think that's accurate. You do have to go and basically promote yourself.
Yeah.
And it's what you have to do.
Right.
Well, people make assumptions all the time.
Yeah.
And so you need to really be clear. And regardless, You know, if you go on maternity leave, you're a new mother or not, mm-hmm. you should be very clear about what your aspirations are, mm-hmm. what you're hoping to achieve, and have that conversation with your boss.
Right. I guess one of the things that strikes me about this question, though, is that she can't do the same thing she used to do now.
Mm-hmm.
So she's talking about this coworker who's able to flirt, and she could flirt, but who can go to all the events and who can really strategically network. And she has to find a new way of doing that, right? As a new mother, because she doesn't have the same time she did. She doesn't have the same freedom that she had. And so I think part of it is defining not just where do I want to go now, but how am I going to build my allegiances, right, as a new mother.
Mm-hmm.
I bet there's also a psychological aspect to it, which you should probably address, which is you probably don't feel as sexy, or you don't feel as good about yourself.
Well, like
in that
you
moment.
Felt during the Cranes
like
interview.
Skirt, like my skirt, right.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I shared that story. Because, you know, it took me a while to feel as if I was presentable, even though to somebody.
Or confident.
Right.
Confident. Yeah.
Right. So there's also the internal stuff going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Like you're aware that your body feels different. If you're nursing, you're busy putting on pads so you're not, you know,
leaking
through your clothes. I mean, there's a lot of very specific things that you're dealing with. Plus, there may be some ambivalence in terms of leaving your baby, you know, for longer periods of time. So it is complicated, I think, on a psychological, emotional level as well as in a career way.
Well, assuming that you still have the same ambition and the same goals, my advice would be you need to be very strategic about the way you spend your time, because it is important, as you said, to build relationships, build allies, build champions across your organization and externally. But you don't have the time.
Right.
And I, you know, one of the biggest pushbacks I get from my clients is, well, I know it's important to network, but I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
And I say, well, you know, what you do is you cross out at least 1 hour a week during the day.
Yeah.
And fill in somebody who you can take to lunch or meet for coffee if you can't go to night meetings. And as far as night meetings go, be very strategic about the ones that you go to.
Right.
You know, where is your tribe? Who are the people you need to know that you want to meet? Are they at those meetings?
I think it's such a good point. We do forget to network at certain times in our life. One, when we're very busy and we're comfortable where we are, we just stop. And also when you do have a life change, like this woman having a child, you do think, oh, that's the last thing on my list.
Yeah.
But I think in any career, you never can drop that. I mean, that's, I think, a very big thread throughout your book.
Yeah.
Which is that you're constantly looking for, you know, your line of power, like where you're going to align yourself. Can you speak a little bit about that? Because I thought that was very interesting how you talk about developing the politics in your company or even outside of your company.
Well, you know, you mentioned your power, and I think that comes from understanding the value that you contribute to your organization, or to the business, and that impact gives you really the confidence to go out and build relationships and be able to understand, you know, how to promote yourself in a very powerful way.
Mm-hmm.
So when you meet somebody and you find out, well, maybe they have challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they have certain things that they haven't been able to overcome, and you might be able to help. And when you find out, you find that bond, you find a way that you can help others, that you end up building very strong relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So, when people talk about building relationships, I say the first one is with yourself.
You have that term in the politics of promotion where you say to, I guess it's creating your mirror. So you sort of look at yourself and come up with your positioning statement, I think.
Your value proposition.
And then you also learn to communicate that to people in a language that they can understand. And I think that's a very interesting thing and something that very few of us stop and do when you're in the job, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're, as Kathy mentioned, going through a change of some some kind. That's not the time when you think, oh, wait a minute, before I have this baby or after I come back from maternity leave, what's my value proposition? Mm-hmm. But that's probably exactly the time when you should be thinking about it a little bit.
Well, you should always be thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're always meeting new people or in a business meeting or doing a presentation or an interview.
Yeah.
Or creating a resume or your LinkedIn profile. You should be able to communicate pretty clearly the value that you bring to the work, to your business. And that transfers, you know, across different positions. It doesn't matter what job you have.
That's really interesting. So you should always know your value proposition. Always. Yeah.
And I think, Kathy, you really help clients with that as well, right? That's something that you focus with them on regularly, especially if they get a promotion.
Usually people come to me at a time when they need to assess that.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about, always knowing your value proposition, well, always knowing what you bring.
Well, the thing is, you were talking about politics. Mm-hmm. You know, talking about, you're trying to build influence as well as credibility and visibility for yourself in the organization. And the way you build influence is to approach relationships this way, that you can add value to others across the organization by the way work that you do, by the way you approach the work. Mm-hmm. And that's powerful.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Otherwise, it's all about you, and people tune out. Whereas if you start asking questions, you start asking questions about, well, gee, how's your work going? And what are some of the projects you're working on? And, you know, you're finding you have any difficulty and, you know, maybe I can connect you with somebody or maybe, you know, I read an article last week about this and I can send you. So you're adding value to the relationship and it doesn't come across as me, 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 I'm wonderful, you know, like mm-hmm. an elevator pitch might.
So what we're telling then this person whose colleague did more of the self-promotion version of this.
In her absence.
Mm-hmm. And now she's busy trying to get her territory back or maybe gain more territory is that you're saying she should focus on building her relationships further, her business relationships. And you're also saying to do it strategically and mm-hmm. specifically with an eye to, of course, you don't have as much time as you used to. You're a new mother, but there are ways and you could even create a practice is what I hear you saying, like an hour a day that you dedicate to building your network further.
Right. I think strategic is really the big
key
word
term
here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when you're building your network, you know, I often say a lot of women build their network like throwing spaghetti against the wall to see what sticks. Collect business cards.
I thought that was the way you did it.
I'd rather eat the spaghetti, although I'm on gluten-free these days. But, we approach it like, how many business cards, how many people can we meet? And the approach needs to be, who do I know and who do I need to know to meet my goal?
Yeah.
Mm. And then you have a very focused approach. So you're not running around trying to meet, you know, a million people. You're not on social media trying to get 10,000 followers.
Right, right.
It's quality.
Yeah. Mm. I also heard in summing up that you said to go to your boss and just let them know what your plan is, what your mm-hmm. goals are,
right.
Because people do make assumptions after
yes.
you've had a baby.
Absolutely.
Or you've had some kind of a life change. If you're caring for elders, they just assume you don't want to travel. They assume that you don't want to work late mm-hmm. and that you don't want to have another project on your plate. And don't let people make assumptions for you. I thought that was a really interesting point.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether you had a baby or not.
Right.
You need to have that conversation with your boss.
Right.
And either that person is going to support you and help you say, how do I get from A, where I am now, to B? What kind of resources are there? You know, who can mentor me mm-hmm. and sponsor me? Looking for a different type of experience with a client, perhaps, or, mm-hmm. Building your portfolio that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you want to know that there's a clear path for you to get from where you are to where you want to go.
Right. So really advocating for yourself, which I think is a hard thing to do. Yeah. I don't want to, you know, overestimate it and think everybody knows how to advocate for themselves. I think it's a hard thing.
Well, the other thing, which is, I think, specific, it's certainly with clients that I have who have children or, you know, have just had babies, is that they worry that their value isn't as high now. And they worry that they don't have the same energy to bring to the job. So part of what I hear you saying is that you actually have to figure out your value no matter what, but then also your style of being seen. Mm-hmm. You know, how are you going to showcase your talents now? Do you want to be the specific speaker at a conference, but really target the conference that would be a good one for you to be seen at, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Targeted.
Yeah. Yeah. Target and strategic.
And it doesn't matter. Like I said, new mother, I mean, women don't have time, period.
Right.
You know, research shows we still have the burden of domestic responsibility, even with a supportive partner. So
our local research says the same, right, Kathy?
Research as local as my house.
My house.
Firsthand.
I mean, I was telling Catherine today that, you know, we actually cleaned our oven after many years this weekend, and what a nightmare that was. And Catherine said, we? I was like, yeah, actually, he really did help me. It was terrific. Anyway, so we're going to take a commercial break and then come back with some questions that Catherine and I have about the politics of promotion, about the wonderful book you wrote.
Ever feel like you or your company could use a 20-minute therapy session? Well, K-Squared has your back. Simply download a K-Talk, plug in those ear pods, or gather a group of your coworkers and feel better instantly. Well, almost. Each K-Talk covers a specific topic and costs a fraction of what a traditional therapy session would. Feeling stressed by your workload? There's a K-Talk for that. Working with someone who's done you wrong? There's a K-Talk for that. Can't ask for a raise, need a vacation, hate your boss? K-Talk, K-Talk, K-Talk. Just go to ksquaredenterprises.com and purchase the K-Talk that fits your situation. Now back to our show.
All right, welcome back. Our guest is Bonnie Marcus, who wrote The Politics of Promotion. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't picked up a copy of this book, you can get it anywhere, right? Certainly mm-hmm. Amazon. Yeah, yeah, it's available anywhere. How long has it been out?
It came out the end of March 2015.
Okay, so, wow.
But it's evergreen.
It's totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, it's a really important book about how to, I'm going to let you, give us a synopsis. How would you describe it?
Well, yeah. I mean, the reason I think it's important now is that we are very sensitive to politics in general.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so when you talk about how to navigate politics, even in the workplace, most women cringe. Mm. I mean, they did so even before this presidential mm-hmm. campaign, but I think it's certainly more sensitive of an issue before. When I did research for the book, I found that women really find that politics is dirty and manipulative and a waste of time. You know, they'd mm-hmm. rather focus on the work. That's where the comfort level is, to do the work, mm-hmm. and that their performance alone will get them ahead. Mm-hmm. But then, as in my own personal case, you know, then you get passed over mm-hmm. because you're not working the relationships and you don't have the power and the influence, and you're not aligning yourself with people who have it as well. So you become very vulnerable. But it's that distaste of politics mm-hmm. that really holds women back.
You know, I just want to say we've also seen men who don't like to do that.
That you took. I was just going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
We see a lot of men that are very smart and don't politic for themselves.
Yeah. But one of the things that caught my attention that you mentioned in the book is that sometimes the way people are politically active has to do with doing activities that if you're a woman, you may not be invited to do.
Exactly. Yes. So I was saying it's easier for a man because let's face it, you know, men still run all the businesses. Mm-hmm. And so the power circles, you know, where decisions are made, the informal networks, you know, the fishing trips, the golf trips that women are often excluded from, where decisions are influenced. I mean, it's not like a formal meeting where you have a decision, but yeah. When women aren't at the table, they can't voice their opinion and they can't influence decisions. And so it's naturally, it's just a more friendly environment for a man. Whether or not he's political or not, yeah, he'll go out and play golf with his boss, right. You know, or he'll go on that fishing trip with the board members, and he doesn't need to be a political animal per se,
right,
to be successful in that.
So then what does a woman do in that situation?
That's what I was going to ask.
In the situation where she's not invited?
Right.
Well, I don't know. There's another story in the book about a client of mine who was working for a large bank in the city here. And she had a great relationship with her boss. And she was the only woman in her department. And they all, you know, kind of worked in an open area. So she found out very quickly that her boss had organized a fishing trip.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in the department was invited except her.
Mm-hmm.
So she went up to her boss and she said, "Hey, you know, if you knew I love to fish, would you have invited me?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "No, it's a guy thing." Mm-hmm. It's a guy thing. So the fishing trip story happens to be one that I use a lot, mm-hmm. because then it was really up to her, and the way I coached her is, again, to be very strategic. You know what your career goal is. Then who do you know and who do you need to know?
Mm-hmm.
And you develop a plan to build relationships with those people. And it can be one-on-one. I mean, it mm-hmm. doesn't need to be, you know, in large meetings or at the board meeting. You can set aside time during the week to have lunch with them or meet them for coffee and still build a very strong relationship where people understand what you bring to the table.
Right. I mean, I've always tried to find different ways to bond with people, whether mm-hmm. it's over we enjoy the same kind of books mm-hmm. or we're on, you know, one thing you could be on boards together or you can have the same, you know, sort of social connection.
Yeah, your kids could be in playing soccer together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you just have to find that connection with each person.
Mm-hmm.
Make it a point to find that connection.
Right.
The common ground.
Right. That's what you have to look for. So the part of your book that interested me, I mean, all of it did, but when you talk about a sponsor versus a mentor, and you say you have to have both, which I think is really a great idea. I mean, to get my clients to have a mentor or to have a sponsor is enough, but they really need to have two. And so I'm going to let you explain that because I think it's very important.
Well, there is a difference between the mentor and a sponsor, and that really has to do with power.
Mm-hmm.
So a mentor typically would be somebody whose advice you really admire. You know, you maybe they're a role model. It could be your boss. For women, it could be somebody who, another woman
mm-hmm.
who has children, who's made it to the top, and, you know, you're seeking their advice either informally or formally. So mentors give you advice.
Mm-hmm.
Sponsors bring much more power mm-hmm. because they not only give you that advice, but they take action
mm-hmm.
on your behalf. Mm-hmm. They create opportunities for you. They promote you within the organization. They have your back so mm-hmm. you can take risks. And they're usually a very high-level executive, at least two levels above
mm-hmm.
above you, who really understand your value proposition.
Mm-hmm.
They have a sight line to your work. And the question I'm always asked is, well, how do I go up to somebody and ask them to be my sponsor?
Right.
Whenever I speak on this topic. And the answer is you really don't. You know, well, a lot of these relationships develop organically.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, you know, when you are building that strategic network and you're identifying potential sponsors, because that's what you really need to do, you then go about becoming more visible with that person.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of their pet projects? What are some initiatives that you can get involved with? Mm-hmm. So one of my clients, her sponsor was the sponsor of the Women's Network at a large bank.
Mm-hmm.
And so she became involved and he asked her to run the whole network and she did. But whatever it is, you are you're learning more about them over time, how you can add value for them, because it's a two-way street, it's a mutually beneficial relationship. And over time, it should develop where, you know, that person will step up for you.
It sounds like you can't, this is not for shy people. Part of what I'm hearing is that, so for example, even in terms of a sponsor and identifying someone, you might go attend some event where they speak or, mm-hmm. you know, where they hold court or whatever they do, introduce something. And then you have to have the nerve to go afterwards up to that person and say, I so appreciated what you said. Would like to follow what you're doing, that kind of thing. You have to ask at some point in the relationship just to be connected, right?
Just to be connected, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine that if you support that person in looking good, so if you mm-hmm. if you somehow made a connection for them that made them look good, or you got them an article in a newspaper, uh-huh. or you did something that made them look good, your chances of them helping you are higher.
Much higher. So you're building the favor bank.
Right. So I'm even thinking, like, so an introvert, if the introvert behind the scenes can do something,
yeah,
that might help.
Well, you know, I'm also asked that a lot, that, mm-hmm. Well, I'm an introvert, so how can I do all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really very interesting, because I think introverts don't understand the value that they bring, the benefit of being an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the benefits of being an introvert is you really listen very carefully, because you're not talking as much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're observing. So you're getting a real good feel on what makes people tick that, mm-hmm. you know, if you're an extrovert, you miss. Introverts are really good at building strong one-on-one relationships, whereas, you know, extroverts are comfortable in a large group meeting. An introvert can do it one-on-one and build those relationships because they have that connection with people. They understand what really makes them tick.
Mm-hmm.
Extroverts can do that as well. But I don't think the point is that introverts aren't at a disadvantage.
Right.
They actually have qualities that can help them out once they understand what those are.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I think it's interesting. So you're looking for the person who is going to give you good advice.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, you're looking for the person who can, make sure you get a promotion or make sure you're connected to the right
help
people.
You move forward.
So there's the power. You're looking for your line of power.
They have to believe in you.
Right. They have to believe in you.
Because they stick their necks out to sponsor you.
That's right.
And so they're putting their reputation on the line.
So you have to
You have to deliver.
Right, exactly. You have to instill confidence in them that you're worth.
Mm-hmm.
You're worth it. I've been successful at that in my earlier career.
Uh-huh.
You probably have also.
I have. I don't think I did it consciously, you know, what you're talking about. Though I did learn, and this was my upbringing, my father in particular told me, if you ever see someone or hear someone who says something that impresses you, approach them immediately afterwards and ask if you can, and that time was to have their card or, you know, mm-hmm. If they don't mind that you keep watching what they're doing, that kind of thing. So I've sought it, I think, without knowing that I was looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're talking about, what I love about it is that it really is, it sounds like it's something that starts in your early career and you just keep building on through the years.
True. Yeah. And I think that a lot of people aren't aware that they need to do this early in their careers.
Yeah.
That for women especially, they get stuck in middle management,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of where a lot of women sit.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to break out of that, then they begin to think about, well, how can I change what I'm doing? I'm working really hard. I'm performing really well. There's got to be something that will give me this breakthrough.
I think you're right. I think a lot of young people don't think this way. But it's really important. I also fell into it sort of by accident.
Yeah.
Also, I remember when I was working at a jean company, this is back in the 80s, a senior VP just really liked me and gave me a lot of opportunities. And then sort of the wrap around the company was, well, he had a daughter my age who became a drug addict, so he just saw her and me. And later I approached him and I said, what made you give me these opportunities? And he said, oh, no, I give everybody opportunities. You took them.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So it wasn't that story about his daughter at all.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It really was something that it was me. You know, I mean, I really did.
It is a two-way.
Well, he gave me opportunities. I took them, and then I made him look good.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, there was going to be another opportunity for me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it's much more likely for a man to be sponsored by another man, another male executive. And all the research shows that women are at a big disadvantage because they don't have the sponsorship that many men do.
That's very sad. And so when you're looking for a sponsor, does it matter if it's a male or a female?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you can have more than one. You don't need one mentor, one sponsor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You should have your own, you know, as they call it, advisory board.
Oh, that's so smart.
You might reach out to different mentors for different things. You know, maybe you're having a difficult relationship with a coworker, so you'll go to one mentor. Or maybe it's about getting new clients, and that would be another mentor. So.
Mm-hmm.
You need to look at different people.
So we all need sponsors. We all need mentors. And we all, I'd love to ask the question about the influencers, the power influencers.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you need those as well. How would you describe that?
Well, it's pretty easy, I think, to identify who are the decision makers. I mean, hopefully it's pretty easy. We should spend some time figuring out who they are because they are truly the people who have power over our careers.
Right.
But then it's important to look at who are the people in their web of influence.
Mm-hmm.
So who are the people who they look to when they're making decisions, who influence them? And I advise everybody to not only build relationships with the decision maker, the person who's in power, but the people who influence that decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so who do they play golf with, or who do they go to lunch with? Who do they naturally gravitate to in meetings?
Mm-hmm.
But it's all that. Sometimes we just focus our attention on the decision maker. And we don't realize that when we're not in the room, there are other people who can advocate for us.
Yeah. Part of what I love about that is I actually think the influencers sometimes are more, certainly they could be more available than the decision maker. And also they may in some ways be more powerful in terms of really being able to come to your aid because they can sell you, so to speak, in a way that the decision maker wouldn't, you know, they really can sort of make a pitch for you.
Yeah. So in the book, when I talk about how to build this strategic network, I have a very methodical approach where you identify people who you need to know and you rank them by how much power and influence they have. And then you rank them by how strong your relationship is with them. So you could really look at that and say, wow, that person, you know, they have a lot of power. They're a 10, but my relationship with them is probably only like a 2.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look immediately at it and say, I need to focus my time and energy there, as opposed to somebody who may be a 10, but you already have a really strong relationship. So it's a very, it's like a mini sales plan in a way.
Yeah, it just kind of reminds me, it seems a little daunting also because probably the people that have the most influence have everybody kind of brown-nosing them, right? Like everybody wants to be their friend. So how do you not come off as a brown-noser yet you want to have a relationship? I find that part a little difficult. And I'm not saying impossible. I would be right in there.
So what's your definition of a brown-noser?
Well, someone who's using the relationship to get ahead, and it's obvious. You know, they're fawning over them. They're telling them, oh, did you lose weight? And, oh, that's a great haircut. And
Yes, that, to everything they say.
Yeah, and, you know, giving them gifts that, you know, they shouldn't be.
One of my clients was very upset one day. She called me up and she said, I can't stand it because, you know, my boss has this favorite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they all work in an open area. Again, it was financial services. And he sits next to this young woman and they giggle all day long and they share secrets. And it just really pisses me off because I'm working really hard.
Yeah.
And it just seems like I'll never be the favorite. And so the way I coached her around this, which is similar to the situation that you're talking about, is what's your value proposition, right? What is your boss hoping to achieve?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the budget numbers? What are his career goals? You know, develop a different kind of relationship so that you understand and you are able to communicate with him, in this case it was a man, how you can help.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that and completely turned that relationship around. She didn't need to be the favorite or the flirty one or whatever.
Right.
But he understood what she brought to the table and how she could help him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was interested. So I think that's a good approach.
Right. Yeah, I think the brown noser, everyone knows that, right? It's exhausting also to do that.
Well, I think what happens, though...
I would find that hard to do.
But what happens is that people get discouraged, as your client was, when they witness that kind of behavior, right?
Oh,
because they think, there's no room for me here, and I can't do that, and I won't do that. And so, but I hear a lot of what you're describing as being true to yourself, because if you go with your value proposition, that's who you are, right? The talents, the skills, the abilities that you bring to the table. And so you're selling bosses, influencers on who you are, not on being cutie, flirty, brown nosy.
Yeah. Well, one thing that, you know, I want to comment on what you said is that our reaction can sometimes paralyze us.
Yeah.
So when we feel victimized, like, I'm never going to get ahead, or they're doing this to us.
Right.
They don't promote women. They don't do this. They don't do that. We end up really getting stuck because we totally give up our power.
Yeah.
And so the best way is to understand that we're giving up our power that way and to figure out how we can be more proactive and take action on our behalf.
Yeah, you know, I have a couple of clients right now who just avoided networking and, you know, and the power, and were overlooked for promotions. I have two right now. And, you know, it's to get them to just do walk-bys, you know, and go have some coffee and, you know, find a reason to approach this person. It's not easy for a lot of people.
That's
I just
want
to say that, you know, we understand that these suggestions are all real and they're really good, but it definitely takes some structure and setting goals for yourself every week, saying, all right, I'm gonna say hi to two people that I need to.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I think that's another thing you bring up in your book.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth tool, I do believe, is executive coaching, is it not?
Yes, it is.
That's right.
That's how you get to use, you know, how to use all the other tools.
Well, I think Kathy's talking about two people who come and work with her and how hard it is for them with your coaching, your support, your ability to sort of talk about, I know internally this may not feel good, but here are the things you need to do for yourself.
Well, both of these people are actually doing it now, and it's interesting. They see the results, and I think what happens is once you catch that fever, oh my God, this works. This really works. I'm going to keep doing it. It does work.
And, it's that first step out of your comfort zone that's the hardest. And I find that with a coach, when I'm able to kind of hold their hand through that, the more they do it, the easier it becomes, because it's really just talking. It's small talk. It's conversation. It's like, you know, if you're standing in line next to somebody at the bank and you begin the conversation. So I try to impress upon them that it doesn't need to be any formal thing where you need to memorize something or write out an agenda. It's just, you know, forget all that. It's about getting to know somebody.
Right, and having them get to know you.
Yeah,
it's true. All right, that sounds easy.
You just have to like people, which not everyone does, especially in New York.
Then there's that.
Then there's that. I don't want to talk to that guy next to me.
It's true, Manhattan. I'm a friendly person, and I will just say that I smile at people, I make eye contact, and half the time someone will say, why are you doing that?
That's me. Saying that to you.
Be careful.
I have a good friend who's in the real estate business, and he said the only problem with the people business is that I can't stand people. I love that idea, because really that's what we're talking about, right? And what the theme of working with you is killing me is that your job, the job description, that's easy. The real work is in navigating the environment, navigating the politics, and figuring out how to get what you want and get along with peoples.
I hope you coach that guy into another profession. Maybe coding or data processing or something.
As a matter of fact, he is doing something completely different
today. There you go. That's a good coach.
I'm a people person, and there are bad days. There just are days when you think, okay, I'm just going to sit with my computer today because it won't talk back to me, and that's it.
Yeah, but these days I think the computer does talk back.
Well, that's another story. Oh, my God.
I need to stay off social media.
Any final thoughts you'd like people to know about your work and your book?
How they can reach you?
They can reach me through my website, which is womenssuccesscoaching.com. And my phone number, all my information is on the website.
And we'll put it on an email, and you can always call us, too,
Great
for that info.
Thank you so much, Bonnie, for joining us.
Oh, this is fun. Thank you.
So join us next time for another My Crazy Office podcast. Tweet us your stories and advice about getting promoted to SK2. Review us on iTunes, and don't forget to send your questions to info@mycrazyoffice.co.
My Crazy Office is produced in New York City at K Squared Studios. Stay crazy.